Let's talk about Gzeilus and Chavalus. So our Mishnah, to actually look at the Mishnah itself now, so our Mishnah talks about different categories. And as the Gemara is going to pick up on, and we can pick up on our own, that it seems like even though there's a number of different jurisprudential issues that are treated with Bezdins of three, there's probably some differences between them. Right? The fact that the Mishnah has to keep stopping and starting, this is three, and that is three, and that is three, and that is three, sounds like even though they're all dealt with by panels of three, that there's something different. So the Mishnah, where it starts off talking about Dinim Omnis Bishlosha, and then says Gzeilos V'Chavalos Bishlosha. So before you even get to the Gemara, which asks the question and gives its interpretation, you already get the sense that there's something different between the Dinim Omnis, that's Bishlosha, and the Gzeilos V'Chavalos Bishlosha is a different category. So let's, before getting into the specifics of the Gemara, let's talk for a few minutes about the various monetary issues that we have. Right? So we mentioned that there is a distinction that we know from other Gemaras between, let's say, Knas and Mammon. Right? That the Halacha recognizes at least two categories in which you pay someone, that you may have an actual monetary debt which we can relate to in a direct sense. And so if I borrow money from you, presumably that's a straight monetary debt. One would have thought that you would group with that also. If I damage your property, then that's a straight monetary debt to pay for it. If I stole money from you, or if I bought something from you and didn't pay for it, these are all areas in which there's a payment which corresponds to something real. Right? That's the general definition of mammon. That's a payment that corresponds to something that actually exists. While knas, in general, is going to represent something above and beyond that. Something that is a monetary payment, but doesn't actually correspond to a monetary value. Now, you follow the distinction? Right, so it's something punitive, or it's something outside a direct restitution. And I think we mentioned already that there's knossos in the Torah. We'll call those capital kuf knossos, like kefel, and like the situations for ones and pitoy that were so much the topic of last year's Masechta. So there are knossos the Torah has, and then theoretically there's what we might call a lowercase kuf. A modern-day Bezdin theoretically could impose a knas in the more practical sense, that a Bezdin in general is empowered to do whatever is necessary to keep society behaving, as we've also been discussing. So sometimes a contemporary Bezdin, if it's really a very, it's not something that we see so often in our own contexts, in a very modern context, because we don't really have Batei Din enforcing things for the most part in our environments. But if you were to have a society, even in Babel, even in Chutz La'aretz, where you have a Bezdin that's really governing the population, so then you can imagine them imposing knossos as well. But again, not knossos in the sense of kefil, knossos in the sense of whatever punitive measures that they deem necessary for society. So we'll call that, for our purposes, lowercase kuf, knas. Knas, it's not mammon, but it's not the knossos that we find in the Torah. So, in general, that's the definition of a knas, that it doesn't really correspond to money. So, for example, if you ever learned Bava Kamma, in the beginning of Bava Kamma, so there is a discussion of tsraros, that there's a certain type of nezek where the payment that you give is chatzi nezek. You pay half of the value of the damage that you caused. And that creates a question in the Gemara, so what is that? Is that mammon or is that knas? Because do we say that since it corresponds to a part of the actual damage caused, so maybe it's a mammonous type obligation, it's just you don't have to pay the whole thing for whatever reason? Or do we say no, that the fact that it's not the exact number, it's half the number, so that shows you that it's actually not the money at all, it's not mammonous in that sense, and rather it's a knas, the whole that really from a monetary perspective, for whatever reason, it's exempt. And there's a penalty of a knas that happens to correspond to half of the value. So it's an unusual situation, because normally a knas would mean you're paying more than the value. In the case of tzraros, you're paying half the value, but maybe that's still called a knas because, practically speaking, it doesn't correspond to the money that's actually involved. So, as we noted, so and as the Gemara is going to discuss here, so one of the ways in which you become liable to somebody is if you stole stuff from them. So let's talk for a few minutes as a little bit of an introduction as to the different types of stealing that exist in the Torah. Right, there are a couple of different types. There are a number of different psukim and a number of different types of stealing that we have find in the Torah. What are some examples? Right, what different Hebrew words, different biblical words that we have for stealing? Yes? So we have gezela, geneva. What else? So a chataf would be a verb, you know, in that sense, and it might be relevant to determining what happens. So it's correct in that sense, but I'm saying in terms of distinct averas in that sense. Sorry? So that also could end up being a form, right? Basically, if you're going to deny the presence of somebody else's property, so that could also constitute, that's true, an act of theft in some way.
Hamas.
Sorry?
Hamas.
Right, so Hamas also, we have to figure out exactly what that ends up corresponding to. What about Oshek? That's the word I'm looking for. That's going to come up here in a few minutes. Now, all of these are different types of theft. Now, I'm hesitant to use the words in English because I think in a real legal sense, theft and robbery and stealing and burglary all mean different things. I'm not trying to be so precise with the English, so forgive if that's a little bit of a mixture of usages. But what are the definitions? Let's say, what's the difference between Geneva and Gezela and Oshek? Those are terms that are going to be particularly relevant for us today. So what are the difference between those ideas? So for the most part, Geneva is defined as an act of surreptitious stealing. That if you take something from somebody without them knowing about it, so then that's geneva. And if you do it in the open, that's called gezela. Now, oshek, which we'll say more about in a little while, oshek probably involves, the way the Rambam defines it, let's say, and we'll talk more about his definition, if you have property in your hands, which maybe you didn't steal in the first place, maybe you didn't take it illegitimately in the first place, but maybe you borrowed it. It ended up in your hands legitimately, but you illegitimately hold on to it. So that's the way the Rambam defines Oshek. And it would seem, in contrast, we'll have to discuss this more, but it would seem in contrast to Geneva and Gezela, which involve illegitimately taking somebody else's item, and that taking is important. That active taking is important. So Geneva, which involves taking something secretly, so we know that it seems to be treated as a more severe avera than Gezel. Right, why is that? Right, what clue do we see, at least one clue that Geneva is considered more chumer than Gezel? Is the presence of? Yeah. Okay, presence of kefil, right? That if you are caught with geneva in your possession, so then not only do you have to give it back, but you also have to give back twice as much. So that's kefil, that's one of the knasos that we find in the Torah itself that we don't handle nowadays. And we don't impose nowadays for lack of bezdin of smuchah. But theoretically in the Torah, so there is this concept of geneva and kefil. Gezel is not subject to kefil. So at least for that one reason, one would get the impression that geneva is more severe of an avera than gezel. So the Gemara has an answer to that. And the Rambam has a different answer to that. You know, the Rambam, as you might be familiar, the Rambam doesn't really hesitate to argue on Chazal, to argue on Gemaras. So especially in this case where it's explaining a concept, so the Rambam took the liberty in Mor Nevuchim to explain a concept differently than the way the Gemara does. So the Gemara says, why is it that Geneva is treated more severely than Gazel. What's the reason? Because the Gemara says the Kadosh Baruch Hu is upset with you, right? As we approach Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, so we're very focused on the distinctions and the interactions between Mitzvos Ben Adam L'Chavero and Mitzvos Ben Adam L'Makom. So here the Gemara says that when you steal something openly, so okay, you're not afraid of anyone. You're just crazy. You're just willing to steal, and you don't care who knows about it. But if you steal something surreptitiously, if you're a ganav, so then it seems like you are afraid. You don't want people to see you. But you're not afraid of God. And therefore, that's particularly offensive. And that's something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a tain on. And therefore, the kefil somehow corresponds to that. It's interesting, the Palatanya writes that he thinks that every Avera, in addition to it being whatever Avera it is, it has a component of Kfira to it. It also has an element of denying God's presence, because if you really believe that God is watching, that God exists and is watching, so then you wouldn't be able to do any Avera. So by engaging in Avera, it's not only that transgression, you're also denying God's presence. So it seems a little severe. Because we know there are all kinds of decisions that we make, even though we are aware that in some sense of the word that they have broader consequences, and nonetheless we do them anyway. So it doesn't mean that we deny the existence of those consequences, but one could say that when it comes to Gneiva, maybe there is particularly a greater element of denial of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashgafa, because the Yetzer Hara to steal, as opposed to other Averus, where there's more, let's say, a physical enjoyment. For example, if you eat a treif sandwich, it's because you want the treif sandwich. So maybe you do realize that God is watching and there's going to be consequences, but okay, so your desire for this treif sandwich outweighs your fear of the consequences, or is able to distract you in the moment right now. But when it comes to stealing, so stealing is generally something that you do because you think that it's going to benefit you monetarily. You think you'll end up having more if you steal. So if you really believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the world and that he gives everybody what they need, so then you recognize that stealing is not going to actually profit you at all, and therefore there isn't going to really be much Yetzer Hara to do that. So one could argue that stealing in general, maybe more than other averos, is offensive to God in that sense, in that it contains a certain element of denial of his hashgacha. But here, the Gemara focuses on the fact that if you steal secretly, so you're basically saying that God's not watching, or I don't care that God's watching, as long as people don't catch me. Well, if you steal openly, you're not worried about anybody, you're just crazy, so then that's less offensive. That's the way the Gemara explains it. The Rambam, in Mora Nevuchim, the Rambam has a different take on it. And the Rambam has a whole different approach. It's basically an economic theory of punishment. We talk about economic theory, we mean the study of human incentives. So basically what the Rambam writes is that we need to have punishments that correspond to how likely something is. That if something is very likely, very easily violated, so then we need more punishments in place to discourage it. While if something is less likely, so then we don't necessarily need so much of a punishment because it's not so likely to happen in the first place. Now, this, of course, is a theme that comes right out of our sugi here, right? The idea that that which is more shchiach, that which is more common, we need more of a structure to address. It's more urgent that we have some kind of system to deal with it. So that reflects the same idea. So in that vein, the Rambam says that when it comes to gazlanim, when it comes to open thieves, so we don't have to worry about them that much. Because it's not a great life being a Goslin. Because if you're going to take stuff from people openly, then you can't go back to live among normal society and then go to Minyan with these people. You're not going to be able to function. Everyone knows who you are, and everyone knows that you stole their stuff. So you're going to have to run off to a cave somewhere. So it's not such a tempting lifestyle. But Geneva, if you can figure out how to steal without people seeing, so then you can continue to live among them, and you can continue to go to minyan with them and to do everything else. So Geneva represents more of a threat to society than Gezeila, which has its own deterrent. So therefore, that's how the Rambam understands that when it comes to Gneva and Gezela, there's a difference, not really because one is more severe than the other, but because we need to act to deter the punishment, to deter the transgression. So Gneva needs more deterrence than Gezela does. Gezel, you're not going to say, what do I have to lose? You have a lot to lose. Gneva, you might say, okay, what do I have to lose? No one will know I'm doing it, and if they catch me, then I'll just have to give it back. So to that, the Torah says, the way the Rambam understands it, no, you won't just have to give it back, you'll have to give back twice as much, and that'll be the deterrent. And in that same vein, he gives another alternative explanation to a Gemara. The Gemara also discusses the fact of Tavach u'Machar, that the Torah says that if you steal a shor or a seh, if you steal an ox or a sheep, and you also shecht it, and you also sell that, so then your payment goes way up. You have to pay 4 or 5 times as much, depending on which of the animals it is. So the Gemara addresses the difference between the two animals, and the Gemara says that if you steal a sheep, so you're going to be more embarrassed because it's hard to get a sheep to go with you. If you steal a shor, so the shor will follow you. The seh you're going to have to carry on your shoulders. It's kind of an awkward way to move around. And the Gemara says, oh, you see the chashivas of kavod abrios. You see how important it is to respect human dignity? That here you have a ganav. If the ganav has to mavazen himself in order to pull off his geneva, that gets commuted to time served. That basically becomes part of his punishment. So he doesn't have to pay 5 times, he only has to pay 4 times. But the shor, this is a Gemara, right? The shor that the Rashi quotes, if I'm not mistaken, Rashi and Chumash, right? If you steal a shor, so a shor that's going to be a easier movement, so then that comes off of your, that means you have to pay 5 times as much. So that din, the Rambam also explains differently, and he explains it consistently with his theory here, his economic theory. It says that you have a shor or a seh, so these are valuable items. They're also hard to protect because you can't really keep them in your residence with you. You have to let them graze outside. So it's much harder for you to keep them. If you had diamonds that were worth as much as an ox, so you could keep the diamonds in your vault in your house and they'd be hard for people to steal. But your ox has to be at some distance from your property, so therefore it's relatively easy for somebody to just come and walk off with it. This is one of the major threats to the economy in America in the 1800s, in the Wild West, right? The cattle rustling. The idea that somebody can just come and take your cows, take your oxen, it's a tremendous threat to people's financial well-being. So, and then, especially if you're going to shecht it and sell it, so then you really have it easy because the owner, he has to keep it healthy and moving around. It's very hard for him to keep it protected. While you, the ganav, you're going to shecht it, so already it's going to be easier to store than a live animal once you shecht it. And once you sell it, you're not going to have it on you anyway, so you really have it much easier. There's a tremendous risk that people are going to lose a lot to people stealing their cattle. So therefore, we have to have a big disincentive. That's where the punishment becomes more severe. It has to be 5 times as much. Okay? So, yeah?
Does he explain why the sheep is for
it? It's closer to the house. I think that's the way he describes it, that the way they had to do it is that the oxen had to really graze farther out, so protecting that was even harder, while the sheep, they're also outside, but they're outside a little bit more within your field of vision, and it was easier to protect that. That part is consistent with the Gemara, right? The Gemara says you'll have an easier time getting the shor to go with you, so therefore we're not going to give you credit for gezeilah and seh. And the Rambam's using that same point differently, saying since it's easier for you to walk off with the ox, therefore we have to disincentivize it more. But that's consistent between the Gemara and the Rambam, that getting the ox to go with you is easier. Right?
In the Gemara, does it specify that it's about carrying? Because that's how I remember it, is that it's harder if you have to carry the sheep instead of
right.
having the ox go along.
I mean, is that supposed to be closer or further?
Right.
Right, yeah, the Gemara does say that.
Gemara,
saying, right, but the point, correct. But that's why it's a bizarion, because you're carrying them on your shoulders, it's going to look embarrassing. But the Sahashava Shabinayim is that the sheep is harder to get than the ox, for whatever reason. Okay, so that's in terms of Geneva, so all of that is present, while Gezel, you don't have that. Now, there is an approach that many Achronim have, Reb Chaim Brisker and others explain this way, that really Gezel is always present in Geneva by its nature. That Geneva is really Gezel plus. That the halakhic definition of Gezel, as Reb Chaim understood it, is depriving somebody else of their money, depriving somebody else of their value. So Geneva has that plus. And Geneva basically includes Gezela and also adds on to it an extra component that you're acting in a sneaky way. Which again is consistent with what the Gemara says when the Gemara tells us that Geneva is worse than Gezel and has this extra punishment. So this also fits with that idea that basically Geneva is Gezel and more. So the Ganav does whatever the Gezel does, but he also adds to it this element of sneakiness. And sneakiness is offensive to a Kodesh Baruch Hu because it seems like you're not worried about him, you're just worried about people. But it also has other detrimental characteristics to it, and that's also a part of it. So, for example, the Gemara says in the Kama that Ben Bagbag, from the Mishnah Perkei Avos, well known, maybe one of those unforgettable names, said that let's say somebody has your property. And we know for sure it's your property. You have the right to it, and there's no other way for you to get it back. So you have the right to seize it. You have the right to take it back for yourself. But nonetheless, even though it's your property, so he tells us over there in the Gemara that if it's in somebody else's house, so you should just come in and take it. And you shouldn't try to sneak in through the back door window like a ganav. In other words, this act of sneakiness, of being a ganav, that's its own added level of problem. And that's an additional component on top of Gezel. So Gezel is the denying of their property, while Geneva is that plus. And therefore, if there's no Gezel in this case, because it's yours to begin with, okay, so then just come and take it. That's fine, but don't do it in a ganavic way. And this is a little bit counterintuitive, so it's worth explaining a little bit more. That if you get your pocket picked, right, somebody takes your wallet because they picked your pocket. So what's that? That's Geneva. Right, let's say somebody mugs you in the street and takes your wallet. So what's that? That's Gezel. Right, so if I were to ask you, Mirtz Hashem, it shouldn't happen, neither of these things should happen to you. You should be open ever to be pickpocketed or mugged. But if you had to choose one, if I told you you're going to lose your wallet one way or another, so how would you rather lose your wallet? Would you rather be mugged? Or would you rather be pickpocketed? Right, so I think everybody probably rather be pickpocketed, right? It's less of a traumatic experience. So if they know that they're going to lose their wallet anyway, so that's the way they would choose. It's a funny choice, but that would probably be the preference. So that's a little bit different from what we were just saying, right? Because we just said that Gezel is less severe in halacha, apparently, than Geneva. Geneva is considered worse. So it doesn't seem to correlate to at least the human perspective, because the human being, you all just voted that you'd rather be a victim of Geneva than a victim of Gezel. So just to clarify, that is also because if you were to be mugged, Chas V'Shalom, so the mugging is really Gezel plus. Right? Gezel would simply be somebody would just come, you'd have your wallet in your hand, or what they call now apple picking, right? You have your iPhone right there, and somebody would just come and grab it. So that would be pure Gezel. But when you imagine a mugging, so you imagine a little more than that. You imagine being terrified, maybe you imagine being hit or actually hurt in some way. So those are all additional avers. So the reason we would perceive that act of Gezel as worse than an act of Geneva is because it would usually involve other offenses and other transgressions on top of it, so that's where it gets worse. But strictly speaking, Gezel by itself is actually less than Geneva. It is included in Geneva. It's the denying of the property without necessarily the sneakiness that is a component of Geneva. So just now to add a little bit more to this introduction, So it is theoretically possible to go in the other direction. It's theoretically possible to take Gneva and subtract Gezel. So there is a Gemara in Maseches Bava Metzia where the Gemara has the question, why is it that the Torah in Parshas Kedoshim says Lo Signovu? What is the thrust of that pasuk, telling us not to steal? So you could say, well, we already know we're not supposed to steal. Now, it's a big question, how do we know we're not supposed to steal? So the Torah says Lo Signov in the Aseres HaDibros, but you might be familiar, it's a whole discussion in the Gemara, whether or not that is a reference to stealing. Right? It's very possible to reference to something else. Right? What might it be a reference to? Kidnapping. Right? Because, as the Gemara says, that's there with Lo Sirtzach and Lo Sinaf, there's a certain level of severity that all of those Dibros are talking about. Those are all talking about capital crimes. So the assumption there is that Lo Signov and the Aseres HaDibros is not talking about stealing objects, it's talking about stealing people. Right? Which is the slave trade, essentially. If you're going to kidnap people, so that's a Chiyuv Misa. So what exactly is the source for Gneva in the normal physical item sense? So that's a little bit of a discussion, but in any event, the Gemara Bava Metzia asks, what is the intent of the Pasuk Lo Signovu in Parshas Kedoshim, working under the assumption that we already know that we can't steal stuff? So here, this is all, by the way, this what I'm about to tell you now, in the next few minutes, this was not at all addressed in the Marmar Komos. This is all kind of background to just the various issues of Gneva and Gezela that are relevant to this Mishnah. So that Gemara tells us that it seems to be the principle there that if you take Gneva and you subtract Gezel from it, it's still awesome. What does that mean? It means that what if I do the sneaky part, but I don't actually intend or practice the keeping somebody's property away from them. So what might be an example of that? How do I have one without the other? Yes, Morty?
Pickpocket someone only as like a joke.
So let's say you do it as a joke, right? So let's say you do it as a practical joke. So that is possibly the translation of the phrase the Gemara uses there. The Gemara uses the phrase Gonev Almanas Lamekat. So that's one example of what's prohibited by that pasuk. So it might mean what Morty just said, that you're stealing in order to do a practical joke, in order to annoy the guy. It's a question how exactly to translate that phrase, because Almanas Lamekat, so we know sometimes in Halacha Lahaknit, you know, means to annoy somebody, to irritate somebody. So maybe that's what we're talking about. If you steal only with the purpose of annoying the victim, you're not actually planning on keeping the item, you're just doing it for the purpose of annoying them, so then that's still prohibited. You could say it a little bit more nicely. Maybe you're not necessarily trying to annoy them. Some of the Rishonim understand that maybe you're doing it with something more positive in mind. For example, let's say the person leaves their property unprotected, and you're worried that they're going to get robbed. So you want to show them that they're vulnerable, so you want to take it for a minute and then give it back to them and say, you see how easily this was taken, it could happen to you, so take better care of it. So that's not with the intention of annoying the person, but it seems like that's also included in this prohibition. And you could translate Amanas Lamekat a little bit differently. You could translate it as, like from the Aramaic of Nikitas Chefetz, of taking something, that maybe it means stealing for the sake of taking, meaning that only for the sake of taking and not for the sake of anything else. Normally you're taking something for the sake of having it. Here you're not going to have it, you're taking it just for the sake of the taking. So that might be what the phrase means, and that maybe that's what the pasuk is telling us, what the Gemara is telling us, that even that type of taking, where you're not going to keep it, that's still a violation. Hi.
You're not going to keep it, but you plan on taking it back, or giving it back, or that you plan on throwing it out?
So you plan on giving it back. There is a minority view, now that you ask, there is a minority view of, not somebody small, view of Rabbi Tam, but it's still both a minority view and very, very difficult, that it's very difficult on a couple levels, because normally, if I take something and keep it, Right? So that's straight out Gnego or Gezel, depending on the circumstances. If I take something for a little while, this is very relevant for our mission also, if I take something for a little while, so I plan on giving it back, and I call it borrowing, that's still possibly Gezela or close to it, because I don't have permission to do it, so the fact that I am only borrowing it only helps a little bit. That's the Gemara says, Shoel Shalom Midas, Nikra Gazlan. So, I mean, Nikra Gazlan, or he's actually a Gazlan, but he's doing something wrong. Take something without permission is clearly not okay either. So you have to say, Pashtus, that this is something less than either of those things. Right? It's not full-blown gazela because you're not keeping it, but even if you're giving it back, normally that's still considered to be something problematic. So this is less than that, and that you're not taking it for your usage at all. You're taking it just for the sake of taking it, like as a practical joke, or to show him how easily he can be robbed or something like that. But you're going to give it back without using it at all. And you also have to assume, just logically, that you're also not only not depriving him of his item, but you're also not depriving him of any significant period of usage of the item. But if I steal your car for a day and then give it back to you the next day, but a day's usage of your car is valuable. People pay a lot of money to rent the car for a day. So if I deprive you of your car's usage for a day, that's also a significant monetary offense. So you have to assume, A, that you're not keeping it, B, that you're not using it yourself, and C, that even if you're not using it, you're not depriving the owner of its usage for any significant period of time that's worth any money. So that's the, I think, the logical understanding. It happens to be that there is a view of Rishona, Rabbein Tam, Rishita Mekubetzis, and Bamin Tzvi points this view, that's very hard to understand. That it does mean you're going to keep it, just means you're not going to use it for yourself. But you will keep it forever away from this person. So that's very hard to understand, because if a person doesn't have this item ever for the rest of their lives, so they're not really going to care whether you're using it or not. They're going to consider themselves just as robbed, whether you're using it or not. So it's very hard to believe that there's any need for an extra source to tell you that it's wrong to do that in any different way other than actual stealing. So the reason Rabbeinu Tam says this, he says it's hard to believe that it's taking it and then giving it right back, because that's Maisim B'chol Yom. People do that all the time. You know, people play jokes with each other all the time, and they take stuff and give it back. So the Ksos HaChoshen writes on that, that it might be Maisim B'chol Yom, but still Aser. The fact that Maisim B'chol Yom doesn't make it okay. That's what the Gemara is telling you, that it's still wrong, even if it's the kind of thing people do all the time. So that's the mainstream interpretation of Rabbeinu Tam is really very difficult. It's hard to work with a lot of things. But the Pashtus is not like that, like the other Rishonim, that you're going to take it and you're going to not use it at all, and you're also not going to deprive the owner for any valuable period of time, and then you'll give it back, and still that's considered to be usur. Some suggest that the reason is that Pashtus is conveyed then in a plural language of lo signovu is in order to tell you that when these kind of things happen, so they generally happen with at least one witness. You purposely make sure there's a witness. Because if I were to steal something and get caught with it later, and then I would say, oh, I was only stealing it as a practical joke, so then you'll say, yeah, sure you're saying that because you're caught with this gazel in your, this knave in your hands. Of course you're going to say it's a practical joke, because working on the assumption that this Aveira, Lo Signov Al Manas LeMekat, is a lower level prohibition than in full-blown Geneva. So of course you'll say that. So you're not going to be believed. And there is an interesting discussion, and presumably such a person should be Chayiv Kefo. Right? So if you get caught with stolen property, so if that's a such situation, you're always Chayiv Kefo. So why are you going to be less Chayiv Kefo, not just because you say, well, it was my intent to give it back, let me just do that and get off with that. Anyone will claim that if that's a valid claim. So for the most part, people who are going to do this are going to make sure that somebody's watching, because that way, you know, there'll be a witness that they'll say to the person who's watching,
oh, look, he left this thing in, it's terrible, he's going to get the stuff stolen, I'll take it now and I'll give it right back to me afterwards. That's the way the average person would do this, because otherwise, even without halacha, just in secular life, presumably somebody's going to do this, is not going to be believed. If they get called later and they claim it was a joke, the tendency if somebody's going to do this to protect themselves would be to make sure somebody else was watching who could back up their story later that it was just a joke. So in that context, so that's how some explain this, why the Torah has it in the plural sense of lo signo vu. The Gemara there also has another discussion that the Gemara says that the another example of this prohibition is, let's say you have clearly positive motives. Let's say you're a new twist on Robin Hood. So Robin Hood stole from the rich to give to the poor. What if you steal from the poor to give to the poor? What does that mean? It means that, let's say you want to help somebody, you want to give him some tzedakah. And you know that he's too proud to accept the tzedakah. So you figure, okay, I'll steal his stuff. I'll get caught with it. Then I'll have to give him kefil. That will be a way to give him a few extra bucks. So that's lo signo b'amanas l'shalom tashlumei kefil. That, the Gemara says there also, is still a prohibition. It's still a violation. So all of these cases, it seems like these are basically, if we follow our definitions, that basically this is geneva minus gezel. Right? That normal geneva is gezel plus, and this is without the gezel component. Gezel is going to keep somebody's stuff. Geneva is that plus sneakiness. And these are cases of the sneakiness without the gezel. So the first case of going going into someone's house to take your own property, that's going to be considered, that would seem to be a problem of geneva minus gezel. And so to hear that goneva manas l'meika, that would also seem to be a problem of geneva minus gezel. There is quite a suggestion in the Minchas Chinuch, it's hard to believe this also, that the Minchas Chinuch suggests maybe there should be a chumrah to geneva al menas l'meika on top of regular geneva. Then when it comes to geneva and gezela, so we don't get malchus. Why is there no malchus for these averes? Because they are different forms of the same idea, that they are alav hanitan l'tashlumin. Or lav hanitak laseh, without getting into the whole, we get into it actually a little bit, because it's a little bit relevant, that both of them are fixable. Right? We have a principle in halacha that there are many, many exceptions to the rule of a lav and malchus. Right? So if you commit a lav, if you commit a lo saseh, so then you're subject to a punishment of malchus, and that's true for every single lav in the Torah, with the exception of most of them. I mean, most of them fall into some category of exception, lav shemitah omaisa, lav shemitah lasaras nisas bezdin, of course, kach misa associated with it. A lot of exceptions to the rule. So one of the exceptions is that if you can pay it back, so then that's an exception. That you pay it back, and you don't get malchus. So there is a difference in language, which may reflect what we've been saying today, that when it comes to gezel, the language actually more specifically is lav hanita v'tashlumin. And when it comes to geneva, the language is a little different. It's lav hanita klase. In other words, gezel is something you can pay back, while geneva is something that you can have a correlating mitzvah sase, and that's instead of malchus. Why is it a different language? So you can understand, based on what we've said so far, right, that when it comes to gezel, the whole avera is about holding on to somebody else's money. So if you give back the money, you have completely reversed the avera. The avera is gone. You have given it back. When it comes to geneva, so we've seen there's a dual offense. You're holding on to somebody's money, and you acted in a sneaky way against them. So if you give back the money, you'll correct part of it. You're not correcting all of it. Part of it is done, and there's nothing you can do about it. The monetary part you can fix. So that's why there's a different language there, that geneva is called lav hanitan l'tashlum, lav hanitan asay. That there's a mitzvah asay which correlates to it, but it doesn't really undo the lav in the same way. It doesn't really wipe away all the damage. And like some explain, that, for example, Rav Sajigo in Sefer HaMitzvos, so there's a commentary on the bottom, if you've ever seen the big Sefer Asag al HaMitzvos, so you know it's three huge volumes. So the Asag al HaMitzvos is really a poem. Sajigon Sefer Mitzvos is a poem of a few pages long. But there's a commentary by a very chashuv businessman, his name was Ruchum Fischel Perlow. So he wrote this huge commentary that takes up three volumes. So Ruchum Fischel Perlow explains that when you do a geneva to somebody, you are victimizing them in two ways. You are taking their money, and you're causing them the great anguish of trying to figure out what happened, and then the great sorrow that they feel when they see that their wallet is missing. So that's an extra component. So that's the part that doesn't get fixed when you pay it back. And that part is a problem in and of itself. And that's why you have an issue of lo signal v'amanas l'neka. Right? Because even if you're going to return it, so you're still violating something and you're causing this anguish. And that's why the aveira is there. That's how he understands that aveira, that this is the anguishing component without the monetary component. And the chiddush of this gemara is that the anguishing component is still prohibited. So just take a rest for a second, right? It's first the mechassinah. So the mechassinah says on top of all this that maybe there's a chumra to go to Vamanas Lamekat. This is also hard to believe, but this is what he maintains, that when it comes to Xela and Geneva in the normal sense, so there's no malchus because you pay it back. So paying it back instead of malchus. So maybe we should say when it comes to Geneva and Vamanas Lamekat, it doesn't help to pay it back. That was your plan to begin with. You're always going to pay it back. Right, so we can't say that paying it back is going to be any kind of a corrective to the Aveira in the first place. It's all part of the Aveira. So therefore, it's not in the category of Mitan Teshlumen, so you should get Malchus. Right, that's quite a thing. You should get Malchus for Gneva and Asa Mekat, but not for Gneva. So it's a little hard to believe. Also goes to the question of, is this really Gneva or not? And so that's a question. This will tie back into our mission, as you'll see. If not today, possibly tomorrow, but this is all a relevant introduction here, that you could say that what's the chiddush when the Gemara says, lo signovu, lo signovu amanas l'meka? So what is the Gemara's point? Is the Gemara telling us that the existing Isser of Geneva comes to include also Gonev amanas l'meka? Or maybe it's saying no, that Geneva means you're keeping the egg. And there's an extra pasuk and an extra drasha to tell you there's another aveira also, that if you just steal to cause somebody a hard time, that's also its own aveira. That's not geneva, it's something else. Are you going to do a question?
Let's say it's a prank and the person who was pranked forgives the fact that it was done in a way. If we're going according to Rabbi Frollo, and there's like a stress in trying to figure out what happened, mm-hmm. and not only did this only happen in, let's say, a second, but also the person thought it was funny after, that stress doesn't seem to be there. That aspect of acting in a sneaky way is something that seems to be missing from the problem.
Maybe. So it's an interesting question. Just parenthetically, it's also important to point out that it seems like if you were to steal something as a practical joke, so you're in violation of lo signovu amanas l'mekat, but also all practical jokes that cause somebody anguish would already be violating the Torah in the sense of amanas devarim. If you're causing somebody emotional pain, so that's a prohibition of amanas devarim. So one might argue that, one could argue that that's always a violation of the Torah. Now there, we would say in that case, the issue of amanas devarim, that if you're talking about a practical joke where two people have a practical joke relationship, where they play jokes on each other, and then when they realize what they are, they both laugh and have a good time, and then rinse and repeat, and they keep the cycle going, so then presumably that's okay. But very often the practical jokes we see, there is a perpetrator and there is a victim. And the victim is not happy about it before or after the fact, so that's why it's onas devarim. So I've always been baffling. Sometimes people get in trouble for hurting other people, and they say, well, it was just a joke. It's hard to see why that's any kind of a defense. It means they found it funny, the victim doesn't find it funny, so that's normally called sadism. That's not an excuse. It's not really any kind of a defense. So it's very often invoked in ways that really don't help at all. A
people say what they did wrong was just a joke. So here we find also in halacha that if you steal as a joke, that's a prohibition. And if you do any other kind of practical joke that causes anguish to the person, so that's a prohibition of anas devar. Now, in that case, if they really enjoy it, they happen to play jokes on each other, and they get a kick out of it afterwards, so you can make a case that that's not a problem. When it comes to geneva, you have to figure out whether it's subject to mechila or not. Now, it's interesting that one could make a case that this really isn't victim-dependent at all. So the Rambam, in his formulation of Gonev Almanas Lemekat, the Rambam writes that one should not do Gonev Almanas Lemekat because that way he is training himself to be a Ganav. So it sounds like the Rambam understands that, and again, this is consistent also with the Gemara statement about not taking back your property by sneaking into somebody's house. It seems like the issue is not so much that this is a Ben Adam L'Chaveru at all. It's not so much that you're hurting the victim, it's that this is a midos problem for you, that you should not train yourself to act in a sneaky way, and therefore, even if there is no gezel involved, even if you're not actually going to be depriving somebody of their property in any real way, still, to act like a ganav, even just in the external sense, is still problematic. That's still something that you shouldn't do. So it sounds like, for example, one could have imagined, let's say I have a security system and I want to test it out. So I want to hire somebody to break into my house to see if the security system works. So one would have thought that should be Heter Gomer, there's Mechila Merosh, there's no Gineva, there's no Ben Adam L'Chavero component there. But it's possible to say that the Rambam would still have a problem with that, right? Because maybe the Rambam's perception is it's not victim-based at all. It's that you shouldn't act sneaky, and maybe it's not going to help that the victim here is completely willing. It's interesting that this statement of the Rambam is invoked in the tshuva, some of the literature about boxing. So Rav Unterman, the chief rabbi of Israel, has a tshuva about boxing, whether boxing is permitted or not. Pashtus, boxing should be aser. Right? This also goes back to our Mishnah here, the first line of Mishnah, Chavalos, is one of the things that Beis Din could theoretically take up as a case. So Chavalos, one should believe, one should maintain, is aser. It's also to be chovah b'chaveiro. So boxing should be a no-brainer, I guess in a few senses of the word, but it should be a pretty straightforward question in that how could you allow it if you're not allowed to hit people, so you can't box. So the whole premise would be that maybe it's okay to hit somebody when the other person is letting you do it. The other person is purposely engaging in this game where you can hit him. So does that make it mutter? So that's part of the literature. Rav Zevin actually has a famous, as Rav Zevin's svarim are always fascinating, but one of the most well-known pieces of Rav Zevin's Lora Halacha is it talks about Shakespeare. So he has an essay called Mishpato Shel Shylock Lora Halacha, and he talks about, can a person willingly decide to give up a pound of flesh? You have the right to be mochel in your chavalah, basically. So this is the same question. So can a person choose to engage in boxing and therefore remove any prohibition of others hitting him? So the Hesaris Tshuva has a tshuva about this. Shailos and Tshuva's Hesaris Tshuva was written by a descendant of the Chassam Sofer and Rebbe Akiva Eiger. And he quotes this Rambam about Gonev Almanas Lemekat, that he seems to assume that they're parallel concepts, even though they're probably different averus, although they are related. Right, Gneva and Chavala would seem to be different averus, but they are connected, especially in the broader sense. So, for example, the Ran says in Sanhedrin that a Ben Noach is prohibited in Chavala because he's prohibited in Gneva. So the detail of Gezel. So therefore, he's not allowed to be Chovel others as well. So they are all connected in that sense. So therefore, the Hesaris Tshuva assumes it could say a similar thing, that if Gneva is prohibited, even if the other party is okay with it, because it's going to be a Midos problem. So therefore, maybe you could use that same Rambam and apply it to Chavala and say boxing is going to have the same issue. So in any event, there are some, including like some Sofer, who wanted to say that this Rambam, it sounds like he's saying that Gneva, Amanas Lemekat, is an Issa Rabbanah.
because he's giving this reason that you shouldn't turn into a ganav. It sounds like it's kind of like gezeira. Sounds like it's an issa d'rabbanan. So I think that's a little bit of a difficult statement to make for two reasons. First of all, we've discussed here in the past, certainly in previous years, if not this year, the concept of a gezeira d'oraisa, that's certainly possible that you have dinim and ha-Torah that are gezeiros for other dinim. Rabbi Yosef Engel has a famous essay where he establishes that. But also, I don't even think the Rambam's calling this a gezeira. The Rambam's giving tamei ha-mitzvos. Right, the Sefer HaChinuch basically says something like that for every one of the 613 mitzvos. For all the mitzvos, the Sefer HaChinuch has a paragraph where he says the Torah prohibited this because it tends to lead to this, tends to lead to that, cultivates this midah, so that's called the gezeira, and that's a din d'rabbanan, so then that's true about all tired mitzvos. So I don't think this Rambam is necessarily so different from what every comment the Sefer HaChinuch has. But he's saying that's what's wrong with Yinei Ba'amanas HaMekat, that it tends to corrupt the character. Fine. So, see, this introduction is taking us a while, but we'll probably have to continue this a little bit tomorrow. But basically, essentially, so that prohibition of Goanei Ba'amanas HaMekat, so one could ask the question, based on the distinction that we've seen so far, between Gineva and Gizela. So, does that Isser of Almanas Lamekat apply to Gezel as well? Because one could say logically that it shouldn't apply. That if, normally, do the math, right? Normally, Gineva is Gezel plus. And Goanei Almanas Lamekat is Gineva minus Gezel. And the whole Chiddush is that the extra part that's added on to Gezel is also Aser. So what if you have Gozel Almanas Lamekat? Maybe there's no Isser, right? Because maybe if you're going to give it back, Gezel is only about keeping somebody's money, and you're going to give it back right away, maybe that shouldn't be subject to any Isser. Right, you hear the logic? So there are some who say, for example, there's a Gemara in Baba Basra. Gemara says that Eov, see, you thought Eov was a big tzaddik. Gemara says that Eov used to steal from orphans. Sounds pretty bad, right? So the Gemara explains what it means is that he would basically take over their fields, if they had inherited fields. He would take over their fields and he would flip them. He would make them more valuable and then give them back. So it was his way of helping the orphans. He would take their land, make it more valuable, and then give it back to them. So you could say, okay, that's very nice. He's helping them. But didn't we say before that Robin Hood, who robs from the rich to give, robs from the poor to give to the poor, is also Goanei Ba'amanas HaMekat? That's still wrong. The Gemara said, Goanei B'Shalom Tashlum LeKefel. But if this is your way of benefiting the victim, it's still not allowed. So how could Eov do this? So on the side of the page of the Shulchan Aruch, on the side of the page of the Torah, the Bach and the Shach, they talk about this. So some say maybe this is a proof, like the opinion of the Gemara, that Eov wasn't Jewish. That maybe Goanei Ba'amanas HaMekat is not one of the seven mitzvahs of Noach, and therefore he wasn't prohibited in this. Now that itself goes back to the whole chakira we could say before. Is this Gneva, or is this a separate thing? If this is Gneva, so Pashas, it is one of the seven mitzvahs of Noach. If it's a separate din, not to annoy people, then maybe, okay, maybe it's not one of the seven mitzvahs of Noach. Rav Yosef Engel himself, by the way, has the Sefer of Shabbos and Shuvas, which is less often quoted, the Shuvas Ben Koras. And in his Shuvas, he actually says, quite a chumrah, I think, that Goanei Ba'amanas HaMekat is pasul eidus. Basically, he's like a ganav, and therefore he is, given the chumrah of Gneva, he is pasul eidus, which is a little bit surprising, because the pasul eidus of a ganav has to do with the fact that he's a money grubber, that he's looking to profit even by abandoning his moral code. So Goanei Ba'amanas HaMekat, the whole point is that you're not looking to profit, so you might think it should be different. So it's a surprising psak. But here, when it comes to Eov, so Eov was apparently Gozel Amanas Lashale, he's probably Gozel to help the victim. So why was that okay? So maybe it's okay because he wasn't subject to the whole prohibition because he wasn't Jewish. Or another possibility you find in the Shach is that maybe there's a difference between Gonev Amanas Amegat and Gozel Amanas Amegat, which, like we logically explained a few minutes ago, maybe that makes sense. Gozel is just about holding on to somebody's money, and Amanas L'Shalem, you're not going to do that, and it doesn't have the extra component of Neva, maybe that should be okay. So it's interesting. Maybe we'll close on this, and then we'll dive in, and we'll continue tomorrow. That maybe tomorrow I'll just provide some of the makoros that I threw in today that weren't on the original list. So we can also look that up. So we'll see how far we get tomorrow if we do Bezin Shachal also. But there was an interesting discussion. You're probably familiar with the journal Tchumen. So Tchumen had some articles. I don't actually remember if this was in the original Tchumen, but for a while there was an English version called Crossroads, where they published English versions of a lot of the articles in Tchumen many years ago, 15, 20 years ago. So there was a whole debate, a back and forth, between one of the authors of the articles and the editor. That the question was, is it permissible for a teacher to confiscate property from the students? So one of the authors of an article there wrote that it's not permissible, because presumably there's two ways a teacher might do this. A teacher might confiscate property forever, or let's say more commonly they'll confiscate property and they'll give it back. Either they'll give it back at the end of the year, or probably more commonly they'll give it back at the end of the school day. So this author wanted to maintain that that should be asur, because this teacher is being gozel amanas lemekat. They're being gonev amanas lemekat. They're taking this or amanas l'shalom. Now, they're not necessarily seeking to annoy the person, but the fact that they're going to give it back and the fact that they're not using it themselves shouldn't help, because we see Amanas L'Shalim is still awesome. So the editor of the journal argued on this and said, first of all, it's not Genev Amanas L'Shalim, it's Gozo Amanas L'Shalim, right? Because the teacher's doing it openly, they're not going to sneak into the student's bag, they're openly grabbing away the item that the student was playing with. So therefore, if it's either Gneva or Gzela, it's Gzela, and Gzela, we might have a position that that's not prohibited when it's Amanas L'Shalim. Now, the broader approach was that that's not really the issue anyway, and that the teacher has kind of a Hefker Bez and Hefker authority within the classroom as the authority figure, and that the parents know that when they enroll their children in the school, they understand that there are certain policies regarding the use of personal property in the classroom. So that's the real reason he disagreed with the author. He said that it's not subject to such prohibitions anyway. But on the way to making that point, he said that even in Timsi Lomer, you had an issue here of Gozel Amanas L'Shalim, it wouldn't be that issue because this would be Gozel, and maybe Gozel isn't subject to that. So that highlights, again, this difference between Gneva and Gzela, and between the different components of Gneva and Gzela, and the different aspects that are involved in each of these transgressions. So all of this, you will see, is very relevant to our Mishnah and to the whole back and forth, so we'll have to see just how it is tomorrow. So any questions? We'll stop here. We're just in time for a minute, so we'll continue back on tomorrow on a Tuesday schedule. Yeah, we'll use the German, those, one.